that he is someone whom I would like to see more of. As the class begins to fill, Landon and I make a point to introduce ourselves to the professor. Afterward, as the day continues, I begin to regret taking 5 classes instead of 4. I rush to my British literature elective, thanking God it's the last class of the day, and barely make it on time. I'm relieved when I see Landon sitting in the front row, the seat next to him empty.
"Hagen,"
he says with a smile as I sit down. The professor begins the class, handing out the syllabus for the semester and giving a brief introduction about himself, what led him to become a professor, and his excitement for the topic. I love that college is different from high school, and the professors don't make you stand in front of the class and introduce yourself, or do any other embarrassing and unnecessary things. In the middle of the professor explaining our reading lists, the door creaks open and I hear myself groan as Hardin stumbles into the classroom. "Great," I say under my breath, sarcastically.
"You know Hardin?"
Landon asks. Hardin must have quite the reputation around the campus if someone as sweet as Landon knows of him. "Sort of. My roommate is friends with him. He's not my favorite person," I whisper. As I do so, Hardin's green eyes lock on mine, and I worry that he's heard me. What would he do if he had? But honestly, I don't care if he did. It's not like he isn't aware that we don't care for each other. I find myself curious about what Landon knows about him, though, so I can't help but ask, "Do you know him?"
"Yeah, he's..."
He stops talking and turns slightly to look behind us. I look up and see Hardin sliding into the desk next to me. Landon stays quiet for the rest of class, keeping his eyes focused on the professor the entire time.
"That's all for today. I will see you all again on Wednesday,"
Professor Hill says and dismisses us. "I think this will be my favorite class," I tell Landon as we walk outside, and he agrees, but his face falls when we realize Hardin is walking next to us. "What do you want, Hardin?" I ask, giving him a taste of his own medicine. It doesn't work, or I don't have the right tone for it, because all he seems is amused.
"Nothing. Nothing. I'm just so glad we have a class together,"
he says mockingly, and runs his hands through his hair, shaking it and pushing it up on his forehead. I notice an oddly shaped infinity symbol tattooed just above his wrist, and he lowers his hand as I try to study the surrounding ink.
"I'll see you later, Tessa,"
Landon says, excusing himself.
"You would find the lamest kid in class to befriend,"
Hardin says as he watches him go. "Don't say that about him. He's a sweet guy, unlike you." I'm shocked at my harsh words. He really brings out the worst in me. Hardin turns back to me.
"You're becoming more feisty with each chat we have, Teresa."
"If you call me Teresa one more time," I warn, and he laughs. I try to picture what he would look like without his tattoos and piercings. Even with them, he's very attractive, but his sour personality ruins him. We begin walking along back in the direction of my dorm and get about 20 steps when all of a sudden he shouts out,
"Stop staring at me,"
turns a corner and disappears down a pathway before I can even think of a response. Chapter 14. After several exhausting but exciting days, it's finally Friday, and my first week of college is almost over. Feeling pleased with the way the week has gone overall, I plan on just watching some movies, since Steph will most likely be at a party and it'll be quiet. Having all my classes syllabi really makes things easier for me, and I can do a lot of the work ahead of time. I grab my bag and leave early, stopping by the cafe to grab a coffee to get an extra shot of energy for the beginning of the weekend. "Tessa, right?" a girl's voice says behind me as I wait in line. I turn around to find the pink-haired girl from the party. Molly, I think Steph called her. "Yeah, that's me," I answer and turn to face the counter, attempting to avoid further conversation. "Are you coming to the party tonight?" she asks. She has to be mocking me, so sighing, I turn around again and I'm about to shake my head no when she says, "You should. It's going to be awesome." She runs her tiny fingers over a large fairy tattooed on her forearm. I pause for a moment, but do shake my head and say, "Sorry, I have plans." "Too bad. I know Zed wanted to see you." At that, I can't help but laugh, but she only smiles. "What? He was talking about you just yesterday. I doubt that. But even if he was, I have a boyfriend, I tell her, causing her smile to grow. Too bad. We could have double-dated, she says ambiguously, and I inwardly thank God when the barista calls my order. In my haste, I grab the cup too roughly, and a little bit of coffee laps over the edge and burns my hand. I curse, hoping that this isn't setting the tone for my weekend. Molly waves goodbye to me, and I smile politely before I exit the shop. Her comments replay in my mind. Double date with who? Her and Harden? Are they actually dating? As nice and attractive as Zed may be, Noah is my boyfriend, and I would never do anything to hurt him. I know that we haven't spoken much this week, but that's only because we've both been so busy. I make a mental note to call him tonight and catch up, see how he's been doing without me. After my coffee burn and awkward encounter with Miss Pinkhair, my day improves. Landon and I had made plans to start meeting at the coffee shop before the classes we have together. So he's leaning against the brick wall, and as I walk up to him, he greets me with a big smile.
I'm leaving about 30 minutes into class today. I forgot to tell you that I'm flying back to my hometown for the weekend, he says.
I'm happy for him to visit Dakota, but I hate the idea of sitting through British literature without him, and with Harden, if he shows. He was absent Wednesday, not that I was paying attention. I turned to him. So soon? The semester just started.
It's her birthday, and I promised her months back that I would be there.
He shrugs. In class, Harden takes his seat next to me but doesn't say a word, not even when, as promised, Landon leaves 30 minutes into class, which suddenly makes me even more aware of Harden's presence beside me.
Monday we begin our week-long discussion of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice,
Professor Hill announces as class ends. I don't hide my excitement, and I'm fairly sure that I just let out a squeal. I have read that novel at least 10 times, and it's one of my favorites. Although he hadn't really said anything to me all during class, Harden walks up close beside me. I swear I could almost predict what he's going to say with that deadpan look in his eyes.
Let me guess. You are just madly in love with Mr. Darcy.
Every woman who has read the novel is, I say, without meeting his eyes. We reach the intersection and I look both ways before crossing the street.
Of course you do.
He laughs, continuing to follow me along the busy sidewalk. I'm sure you aren't able to comprehend Mr. Darcy's appeal. My mind goes to the massive collection of novels in Harden's room. They couldn't possibly be his, could they?
A man who is rude and intolerable being made into a romantic hero? It's ridiculous. If Elizabeth had any sense, she would have told him to fuck off from the beginning.
I laugh at his choice of words, but cover my mouth, stopping myself. I was actually enjoying our little banter and his presence, but it would only be a matter of time, 3 minutes if I'm so lucky, until he says something hurtful. Looking up, I meet his dimpled grin and can't help but admire his good looks. Piercings and all.
So you do agree that Elizabeth is an idiot?
He raises his eyebrow. No, she's one of the strongest, most complex characters ever written, I say in her defense, using the words from one of my favorite movies. He laughs again and I join him, but after a few seconds, catching himself having a decent laugh with me, he stops suddenly and his laughter fades. Something flashes in his eyes.
I'll see you around, Teresa,
he says, and turns on his heel and disappears back where we'd come from. What is with him? Before I can begin to analyze his actions, my phone rings. Noah's name flashes across my screen, and I feel oddly guilty as I answer.
Hey, Tess, I was going to text you back, but I figured I might as well call.
Noah's voice is clipped, a bit distant. What are you doing? You sound busy.
No, just on my way to meet some friends at the grill,
he explains. Okay, well, I won't keep you. I'm so glad it's Friday. I am ready for the weekend.
Are you going to another party? Your mom is still disappointed.
Wait, why did he mention it to my mother? I love that he has a close relationship with her, but sometimes dating him is like having an annoying little brother who tattles on me. I hate to compare him that way, but it's true. Rather than getting into it with him, I just tell him, No, I'm staying in this weekend. I miss you.
I miss you too, Tess. So much.
Call me later, okay?
I agree, and we exchange I love yous before hanging up. When I get back to my room, Steph is getting ready for another party, which I assume is the one Molly mentioned at the cafe. I log into Netflix and browse the movies.
I really wish you would come. I swear we won't stay overnight this time. Just come for a little bit.
Watching movies alone in this small room will be hell. Steph whines, and I laugh. She continues to beg me while she teases her hair and changes into three different outfits before deciding on a green dress that leaves very little to the imagination. The crisp color looks really good with her bright red hair, I have to admit. I envy her confidence. I'm confident to a certain extent, but I'm aware that my hips and breasts are larger than most women my age. I tend to wear clothes that hide my large bust, while she tries to draw as much attention as possible to hers. I know, I say, humoring her. But then my laptop screen turns black, and I press the power button and wait. And wait. The black screen remains.
See? It's a sign that you should come. My laptop's at Nate's apartment, so you can't use mine.
She smirks and teases her hair again. Looking at her, I realize I really don't want to sit in the dorm alone without anything to do or watch. Fine, I say, and she jumps up and down, clapping her hands. But we're leaving before midnight. Chapter 15. I change out of my pajamas and put on a new pair of jeans that I haven't worn yet. They are a little tighter than my usual pants, but I'm in desperate need of a trip to the laundry room, so I don't have much of a choice. My shirt is a simple black button-up sleeveless shirt with lace trim on the shoulders.
Wow, I actually like your outfit a lot, Steph tells me.
I smile, and she tries to offer me eyeliner again. Not this time, I tell her, remembering how it smeared from my tears last time. Why did I agree to go back to that frat house again?
Okay, Molly is picking us up instead of Nate. She just texted that she'll be here any minute.
I don't think she likes me, I say, as I check myself out in the mirror. Steph cocks her head to one side.
What? She does. She's just bitchy and too honest sometimes. And I think she's intimidated by you.
Intimidated? By me? Why on earth would she be intimidated by me? I say and laugh. Steph clearly has this backwards.
I think just because you're so different from us, she says and smiles.
I know I'm different from them, but to me, they are the different ones.
Don't worry about her, though. She'll be occupied tonight.
By Harden? I ask before I can stop myself. I continue to look at the mirror, but I can't help but notice the way she is looking at me with one eyebrow raised.
No, by Zed, probably. She changes guys every week.
That's a harsh thing to say about a friend, but she just smiles and adjusts her top. She isn't dating Harden? The image of them making out on the bed comes to mind.
No way. Harden doesn't date. He fucks with a lot of girls, but he doesn't date anyone. Ever.
Oh, is all I manage to say. The party tonight is the same as last week. The lawn and house are crowded with drunk people everywhere. Why didn't I just stay in and stare at my ceiling? Molly disappears as soon as we arrive, and I end up getting a spot on the couch and am sitting there for at least an hour when Harden walks by.
You look different,
he says after a short pause. His eyes rake down my body and back up to rest on my face. He doesn't even try to be subtle about the way he's assessing me. I stay silent until his eyes meet mine.
Your clothes actually fit you tonight.
I roll my eyes and adjust my shirt, suddenly wishing I was wearing my normal loose clothing.
It's a surprise to see you here.
I'm a bit surprised that I ended up here again, I say, and walk away from him. He doesn't follow, but for some reason I find myself wishing he would have. A few hours later, Steph is drunk again. Well, as much as everyone else is.
Let's play truth or dare,
Zed slurs, and their small group of friends gather around the couch. Molly passes a bottle of clear alcohol to Nate, and he takes a swig. Harden's hand is so large that it covers the entire red cup as he takes a sip. Another punk-looking girl joins the game, making it Harden, Zed, Nate, Nate's roommate Tristan, Molly, Steph, and the new girl. I'm just thinking that a drunken game of truth or dare can't possibly end well when Molly says with a wicked smile, "You should play too, Tessa." "No, I'd rather not," I tell her, and focus my attention on a brown stain on the carpet.
"To actually play, she would have to stop being a prude for 5 minutes,"
Harden tells them, and they all laugh except Steph. His words anger me. I am not a prude. Yeah, I will admit I'm not by any means wild, but I'm not some cloistered nun. I glare at Harden and sit down cross-legged in their little circle between Nate and another girl. Harden laughs and whispers something to Zed before they start. The first few truths and dares include Zed being dared to chug an entire can of beer, Molly being dared to flash her bare chest to the group, which she does, and Steph revealing the truth that her nipples are pierced.
"Truth or dare, Teresa?"
Harden asks, and I gulp. "Truth?" I squeak. He laughs and mutters,
"Of course."
But I ignore him as Nate rubs his hands together.
"Okay, are you a virgin?"
Zed asks, and I choke. No one seems fazed by the intrusive question besides me. I feel the heat in my cheeks and the humor in everyone's faces.
"Well?"
Harden presses. Despite how much I want to run away and hide, I just nod. Of course I'm a virgin. The furthest Noah and I have gone is making out and some slight groping over our clothes, of course. Still, no one seems outright surprised by my answer, just intrigued.
"So you've been dating Noah for 2 years and you haven't had sex?"
Steph asks, and I shift uncomfortably. I just shake my head. Harden's turn, I say quickly, hoping to take the attention off myself. Chapter 16.
"Dare,"
Harden answers before I even ask him. His green eyes bore through me with an intensity that says I'm the one on the spot, that I'm the one dared to do something. And I falter, not having really thought this out or expecting to be met with such a reaction. What should I dare him to do? I know he will do whatever it is, just because he won't want to back down from me. I dare you to...
"To what?"
he says impatiently. I almost dare him to say something nice about each person in the group, but I decide against it, however amusing it would have been. "Take your shirt off and keep it off the entire game," Molly yells out, and I'm glad. Not because Harden will be taking his shirt off, of course, but because I couldn't think of anything, and it eases the pressure of my having to give him orders.
"How juvenile,"
he complains, but he lifts his shirt over his head. Without meaning to, my eyes go directly to his long torso and the way the black tattoo ink stretches across his surprisingly tan skin. Under the birds on his chest, he has a large tree inked under the skin of his stomach. The branches are bare and haunting. His upper arms have many more tattoos than I expected. Small, seemingly random images and icons are scattered along his shoulders and hips. Steph nudges me, and I tear my eyes away from him, praying that no one saw me staring. The game continues. Molly kisses Tristan and Zed both. Steph tells us about her first time having sex. Nate kisses the other girl. How did I find myself in the middle of this group of hormonal college rock and roll misfits?
"Tessa, truth or dare?"
Tristan asks.
"Why even ask? We know she will say truth."
Harden starts. "Dare," I say, surprising them and myself.
"Tessa, I dare you to... take a shot of vodka,"
Tristan says, smiling. "I don't drink."
"That's the point of the dare." "Look, if you don't want to do it..."
Nate starts to say, and I look over at Harden and Molly sharing a laugh at my expense. "Fine, one shot," I say. I think Harden will probably have yet another contemptuous expression at this, but when his eyes meet mine, I find he's giving me a strange look instead. Someone hands me the clear bottle of vodka. I mistakenly put my nose against the top, smelling the foul liquid which burns my nostrils. I scrunch my nose, trying to ignore the chuckles behind me. I try not to think of all the mouths that have been on the bottle before me, and I just tilt it back and take a drink. The vodka feels hot and burns all the way down to my stomach, but I manage to swallow it. It tastes horrible. The group claps and laughs a little, everyone except Hardin. If I didn't know him any better, I would think he was mad or disappointed. He is so strange. After a short time, I can feel the heat in my cheeks, and then later, the small amount of alcohol in my veins that grows with each round that I am dared to take another shot. I oblige, and I have to admit I feel pretty relaxed for once. I feel good. With this feeling, everything seems a little easier. The people around me all seem a little more fun than before.
Same dare,
Zed says with a laugh and takes a swig from the bottle before handing it to me for the fifth time. I don't even remember the dares and truths that have been happening around me for the last few rounds. This time, I take two big drinks of the vodka before it's ripped from my grasp.
I think you've had enough,
Hardin says and hands the bottle to Nate, who takes a drink. Who the hell is Hardin Scott to tell me when I have had enough? Everyone else is still drinking, so I can too. I grab the bottle back from Nate and take a drink again, making sure to give Hardin a smirk as the bottle touches my lips.
I can't believe you've never been drunk before, Tessa. It's fun, right?
Zed asks, and I giggle. Thoughts of my mother's lecture on irresponsibility flood my mind, but I push them back. It's only one night. Hardin, truth or dare? Molly asks. He answers dare, of course. I dare you to kiss Tessa, she says, and gives him a fake smile. Hardin's eyes go wide, and though the alcohol is making everything more exciting, I really just want to run away from him. No, I have a boyfriend, I say, making everyone laugh at me for the 100th time tonight. Why am I even hanging around these people who keep laughing at me? So? It's just a dare. Just do it, Molly says, pressuring me. No, I'm not kissing anyone, I snap and stand up. Without looking at me, Hardin just takes a drink from his cup. I hope he's offended. Actually, I don't care if he is. I'm through interacting with him like this. He hates me and is just too rude. As I get to my feet, the full effect of the alcohol hits me. I stumble but manage to pull myself together and walk away from the group. Somehow I find the front door through the crowd. As soon as I'm outside, the fall breeze hits me. I close my eyes and breathe in the fresh air before going to sit on the familiar stone wall. Before I realize what I'm doing, my phone is in my hands, dialing Noah.
Hello?
He says. The familiarity of his voice and the vodka in my system make me miss him more. Hey, babe, I say, and bring my knees to my chest. A beat of silence passes.
Tessa, are you drunk?
His voice is full of judgment. I shouldn't have called him. No, of course not, I lie and hang up the phone. I press my finger down on the power button. I don't want him to call back. He's ruining the good feeling from the vodka, worse than even Hardin did. I stumble back inside, ignoring whistles and crude comments from drunk frat guys. I grab a bottle of brown liquor off the counter in the kitchen and take a drink. Too big of a drink. It tastes worse than the vodka, and my throat feels like it's on fire. My hands fumble for a cup of anything to get the taste out of my mouth. I end up opening the cabinet and using a real glass to pour some water from the sink. It helps the burn a little, but not much. Through a break in the crowd, I see that the group of my friends are still sitting in a circle playing their stupid game. Are they my friends? I don't think they are. They only want me around so they can laugh at my inexperience. How dare Molly tell Hardin to kiss me? She knows that I have a boyfriend. Unlike her, I don't go around making out with everyone. I've kissed only two boys in my life, Noah and Johnny, a freckle-faced kid in third grade who kicked me in the shin afterward. Would Hardin have gone along with the dare? I doubt it. His lips are so pink and full, and my head plays an image of Hardin leaning over to kiss me, and my pulse begins to race. What the hell? Why am I thinking about him like that? I am never drinking again. Minutes later, the room begins to spin, and I feel dizzy. My feet lead me upstairs to the bathroom, and I sit in front of the toilet, expecting to throw up. Nothing happens. I groan and pull myself up. I am ready to go back to the dorms, but I know Steph won't be ready for hours. I shouldn't have come here. Again. Before I can stop myself, my hand is turning the knob on the only room I'm somewhat familiar with in this oversized house. Hardin's bedroom door opens without a problem. He claims to always lock his door, but he's proving otherwise. It looks the same as before, only this time the room is moving around beneath my unsteady feet. Wuthering Heights is missing from where it was on the shelf, but I find it on the bedside table next to Pride and Prejudice. Hardin's comments about the novel replay in my mind. He has obviously read it before, and understood it, which is rare for our age group, and for a boy especially. Maybe he had to read it for class before, that's why. But why is this copy of Wuthering Heights out? I grab it and sit on the bed, opening the book halfway through. My eyes scan the pages and the room stops spinning. I'm so lost in the world of Catherine and Heathcliff that when the door opens, I don't hear it.
What part of "no one comes into my room" did you not understand?
Hardin booms. His angry expression scares me, but somehow humors me at the same time. Sorry, I...
Get out.
He spits, and I glare at him. The vodka is still fresh in my system, too fresh to let Hardin yell at me.
You don't have to be such a jerk.
My voice comes out much louder than I had intended.
You're in my room again after I told you not to be. So get out,
he yells, stepping closer to me. And with Hardin looming in front of me, mad, seething with scorn and making it seem like I'm the worst person on earth to him, something inside me snaps. Any composure I had snaps in half, and I ask the question that's been at the front of my brain without my wanting to acknowledge it. Why don't you like me? I demand, staring up at him. It's a fair question, but, to be honest, I don't really think my already wounded ego can take the answer. Chapter 17. Hardin glares at me. It's aggressive, but unsure.
Why are you asking me this?
I don't know. Because I have been nothing but nice to you, and you've been nothing but rude to me. And then I add, and here I actually thought at one point we could be friends, which sounds so stupid that I pinch the bridge of my nose with my fingers while I wait for his answer.
Us? Friends?
He laughs and throws up his hands.
Isn't it obvious why we can't be friends?
Not to me.
Well, for starters, you're too uptight. You probably grew up in some perfect little model home that looks like every other house on the block. Your parents probably bought you everything you ever asked for, and you never had to want for anything. With your stupid pleated skirts. I mean, honestly, who dresses like that at 18?
My mouth falls open. You know nothing about me, you condescending jerk. My life is nothing like that. My alcoholic dad left us when I was 10, and my mother worked her ass off to make sure I could go to college. I got my own job as soon as I turned 16 to help with bills, and I happen to like my clothes. Sorry if I don't dress like a slut like all the girls around you. For someone who tries too hard to stand out and be different, you sure are judgmental about people who are different from you. I scream, and feel the tears well up in my eyes. I turn around so he won't get to remember me like this, and I notice that he's bawling his fists, like he gets to be angry about this. You know what? I don't want to be friends with you anyway, Hardin, I tell him, and reach for the door handle. The vodka, which has made me brave, is also making me feel the sadness of this situation, of our yelling.
Where are you going?
He asks. So unpredictable, so moody. To the bus stop, so I can go back to my room and never, ever come back here again. I am done trying to be friends with any of you.
It's too late to take the bus alone.
I spin around to face him. You are not seriously trying to act like you care if something happened to me. I laugh. I can't keep up with his changes in tone.
I'm not saying I do. I'm just warning you. It's a bad idea.
Well, Hardin, I don't have any other options. Everyone is drunk, including myself. And then the tears come. I am beyond humiliated that Hardin, of all people, is seeing me cry. Again.
Do you always cry at parties?
he asks, and ducks his head a little, but with a small smile. Apparently, whenever you're at them, and since these are the only ones I've ever been to, I reach the door again and open it.
Teresa.
He says so soft that I almost don't hear him. His face is unreadable. The room starts to spin again, and I grab onto the dresser next to his door.
You okay?
He asks. I nod, even though I feel nauseous.
Why don't you just sit down for a few minutes, then you can go to the bus station.
I thought no one was allowed in your room, I state, then sit on the floor. I hiccup, and he immediately warns,
If you throw up in my room...
I think I just need some water, I say, and move to stand up.
Here,
he says, putting a hand on my shoulder to keep me down and handing me his red cup. I roll my eyes and push it away. I said water, not beer.
It is water. I don't drink,
he says. A noise somewhere between a gasp and a laugh escapes me. There is no way Hardin doesn't drink. Hilarious. You're not going to sit here and babysit, are you? I really just want to be alone in my pathetic state, and my buzz is wearing off, so I'm starting to feel guilty for yelling at Hardin. You bring out the worst in me, I murmur aloud, not quite meaning to.
That's harsh,
he says, his tone serious.
And yes, I am going to sit here and babysit you. You are drunk for the first time in your life, and you have a habit of touching my things when I'm not around.
He goes and takes a seat on his bed, kicking his legs up. I get up and grab the cup of water. Taking a big drink, I can taste a hint of mint on the rim and can't help but think about how Hardin's mouth would taste. But then the water hits the alcohol in my stomach, and I don't feel so hot. God, I am never drinking again, I remind myself as I sit back down on the floor. After a few minutes of silence, Hardin finally speaks up.
Can I ask you a question?
The look on his face tells me I should say no, but the room's still not feeling entirely solid, and I think maybe talking will help me focus, so I say, Sure.
What do you want to do after college?
I look up at him with new eyes. That is literally the last thing I thought he would ask. I assumed he would ask why I'm a virgin or why I don't drink. Well, I want to be an author or a publisher, whichever comes first. I probably shouldn't be honest with him. He will just make fun of me. But when he doesn't say anything back, I start feeling brave and ask him the same question, earning an eye roll from him, but no answer. Finally, I ask, Are those your books? Even though it's probably futile.
They are.
He mumbles. Which is your favorite?
I don't play favorites.
I sigh and pick at a small fray on my jeans.
Does Mr. Rogers know you're at a party again?
Mr. Rogers? I look back up at him. I don't get it.
Your boyfriend. He is the biggest tool I have ever seen.
Don't talk about him like that. He is... Nice, I stutter. When Hardin laughs, I stand up. He doesn't know Noah at all. You could only dream of being as nice as he is, I say sharply.
Nice? That's the first word that comes to your mind when talking about your boyfriend. Nice is your nice way of calling him boring.
You don't know him.
Well, I know he's boring. I could tell by his cardigan and loafers.
Hardin's head rolls back in laughter, and I can't ignore his dimples. He doesn't wear loafers, I say, but I have to cover my mouth so I don't laugh with him at my boyfriend's expense. I grab the water and take another drink.
Well, he has been dating you for 2 years and hasn't fucked you yet, so I would say he is a square.
I spit the water back into the cup. What the hell did you just say? Just when I think we can get along, he says something like that.
You heard me, Teresa.
His smile is cruel. You're an asshole, Hardin, I growl, and throw the half-empty cup at him. His reaction is exactly what I hoped for. Complete shock. While he wipes the water off his face, I stagger to my feet using the bookshelf for leverage. A couple of books fall to the ground, but I ignore all that and storm out of the room. I stumble downstairs and push my way through the crowd into the kitchen. The anger I feel has overcome my nausea, and all I want is to get Hardin's evil smirk out of my head. I spot Zed's black hair through the crowd in the other room and go to where he's sitting with a cute preppy boy.
Hey, Tessa, This is my friend Logan,
Zed says, introducing us. Logan smiles at me and offers the bottle he's holding.
Want some?
He asks and passes it to me. The familiar burn feels good. It ignites my body again, and I momentarily forget about Harden. Have you seen Steph? I ask, but Zed shakes his head.
I think she and Tristan may have left.
She left? What the hell? I should care more, but the vodka skews my judgment, and I find myself thinking she and Tristan would make a cute couple. A couple of drinks later, I feel amazing. This must be why people drink all the time. I vaguely remember having sworn off alcohol at some point tonight, but it's not so bad. 15 minutes later, Zed and Logan have me laughing so hard that my stomach hurts. They are much better company than Harden. You know, Harden is a real ass, I tell them, which elicits wide grins from them both.
Yeah, he can be sometimes,
Zed says, and snakes his arm around me. I want to move it, but I don't want to make it awkward because I know he doesn't mean anything by it. Soon the crowd starts to die down and I start to feel tired. It dawns on me that I have no way to get back to the dorms. Do the buses run all night? I slur. Zed shrugs, and just then Harden's mop of curls appears in front of me.
You and Zed, then?
His voice is thick with an emotion that I can't quite register. I get up and push past him, but he grabs my arm. He has no boundaries. Let go of me, Harden. Looking for another cup to toss in his face, I say, I'm just trying to find out about the bus.
Chill out. It's 3 a.m. There is no bus. Your newfound alcoholic lifestyle has you stuck here again.
The glee in his eyes when he says this is so mocking that it makes me want to smack him.
Unless you want to go home with Zed.
When he lets go of my arm, I do go back to the couch with Zed and Logan, because I know it will irritate him. After standing there and nodding for a moment, he turns in a huff. Hoping that the same room from last weekend is empty, I tell Zed to take me upstairs so we can find it. Chapter 18. We find the room. Unfortunately, one of the beds is occupied by a snoring, passed-out guy.
At least that bed is empty,
Zed says and laughs.
I'm going to walk back to my place if you want to come. I have a couch you could sleep on,
he says. Cutting through the haze to try to think clearly for a second, I conclude that Zed, like Harden, hooks up with a lot of different girls. If I agree to this, it could mean I am offering to kiss him. Well, I have a feeling with those good looks, it's easy for Zed to get girls to do more than kiss. I think I will just stay here in case Steph comes back, I say. His face falls a little, but he gives me an understanding smile. He tells me to be careful and gives me a hug goodbye. The door closes as he leaves, and I can't help but lock it. Who knows who will come in? I look over at the comatose snorer and feel secure that he isn't waking up anytime soon. The tiredness I felt downstairs has somehow faded, my mind going back to Harden and his comment about how Noah hasn't slept with me yet. It may seem strange to Harden, who's with a different girl every weekend, but Noah is a gentleman. We don't need to have sex. We have fun together doing other things, like, well, we go to the movies and go for walks. With that in mind, I lie down, but quickly find myself staring at the ceiling, counting the tiles in an attempt to go to sleep. Occasionally, the drunk guy rustles around on the other bed, but eventually my eyes close and I begin to drift off.
I haven't seen you around here before.
A deep voice suddenly slurs in my ear. I jump up and his head bumps my chin, causing me to bite my tongue. His hand is on the bed, inches away from my thighs. His breathing is ragged and smells like vomit and liquor.
What's your name, cutie?
He breathes, and I gag. I lift one thin arm up to push him away from me, but it doesn't work, and he just laughs.
I'm not gonna hurt you. We're just going to have some fun,
he says, and licks his lips, leaving a string of saliva down his chin. My stomach turns, and the only thing I can think to do is knee him, hard. Hard and right there. He grabs his crotch and stumbles back, giving me my chance to bolt. Once my shaky fingers finally open the lock, I rush out into the hallway where several people give me odd stares.
"Come on, come back here,"
I hear the disgusting voice say, not too far behind me. Strangely, nobody seems fazed by a girl being chased down the hall. He is only a few feet away, but fortunately is so drunk he keeps stumbling into the wall. My feet act of their own accord, taking me down the hall to the only place I know in this damned fraternity house. "Harden? Harden, please open the door," I yell, one hand banging on the door and one trying to twist the locked doorknob. "Harden?" I scream again, and the door flies open. I don't know what made me come to his room of all places, but I would take Harden's judgmentalism over the drunk guy trying to have his way with me any day.
"Tess?"
Harden asks, seeming confused. He wipes his eyes with his hand. He is wearing only black boxer briefs, and his hair is jutting out all over his head. Weirdly, I am more surprised by how good he looks than by the fact that he called me Tess for once instead of Teresa. "Harden, please can I come in? This guy," I say, and look behind me. Harden pushes past me and looks down the hall. His eyes meet my stalker, and the creep changes from scary to frightened. He looks at me one more time before turning around and walking back down the hall. "Do you know him?" My voice is shaky and small.
"Yeah, get inside,"
he says, and pulls me by the arm into his room. I can't help but note the way his muscles move under his inked skin as he walks to his bed. His back has no tattoos on it, which is a little strange since his chest, arms, and stomach are covered. He rubs his eyes again.
"Are you okay?"
His voice is raspier than ever from just being woken up. "Yeah, yes. I'm sorry for coming here and waking you up. I just didn't know what..."
"Don't worry about it."
Harden's hand runs through his messy hair and he sighs.
"Did he touch you?"
he asks, without any trace of sarcasm or humor. "No, he tried, though. I was stupid enough to lock myself in a room with a drunk stranger, so I suppose it's my fault. The idea of that creep touching me makes me want to cry again."
"It's not your fault that he did that. You aren't used to this type of situation."
His voice is kind and totally the opposite of his usual tone. I walk across the room toward his bed, silently asking him for permission. He pats the bed and I sit down with my hands in my lap. I have no plans on getting used to it. This really is the last time I'm coming here, or to any parties for that matter. I don't know why I even tried. And that guy, he was just so...
"Don't cry, Tess,"
Harden whispers. And the funny thing is, I hadn't realized I was. Harden brings his hand up, and I almost flinch away, but not before the pad of his thumb captures the tear from my cheek. My lips part in surprise from his gentle touch. Who is this guy, and where is the snarky, rude Harden? I look up to meet his green eyes, and his pupils dilate.
"I hadn't noticed how gray your eyes are,"
he says, so low that I lean closer to hear him. His hand is still on my face, and my mind is racing. Pulling half of his bottom lip in his mouth, he takes his lip ring between his teeth. Our eyes meet, and I look down, unsure of what's going on. But when he removes his hand, I look at his lips once more, and I can feel my conscience and my hormones battling. But my conscience loses, and I crash my lips against his, catching him totally off guard. Chapter 19. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I can't stop. As my lips touch Harden's, I feel his sharp intake of breath. Harden's mouth tastes just like I had imagined. I can taste the faint hint of mint on his tongue as he opens his mouth and kisses me. Really kisses me. His warm tongue runs along mine, and I can feel the cold metal of his lip ring on the corner of my mouth. My entire body feels like it's been ignited. I have never felt like this before. He brings his hand to my face, cupping my flushed cheeks, before both of his hands go to my hips. He pulls back a little and plants a small kiss on my lips.
"Tess,"
he breathes out, then quickly brings his mouth back to mine, his tongue sliding in once more. My mind is no longer in charge. The sensation has taken over every inch of me. Hardin pulls me by my hips closer to him as he lies back on the bed, never breaking our kiss. Unsure of what to do with my hands, I put them against his chest and then climb onto his torso. His skin is hot and his chest is moving up and down with his rapid breaths. He pulls his mouth away from mine and I whimper at the loss of contact, but before I can complain, he's at my neck. I feel every swipe and lick his tongue makes. His breath moves across me. He grabs hold of my hair to keep my head just above his as he continues to kiss my neck. His teeth graze my collarbone and I moan, the feeling shooting down my whole body when he begins gently sucking on my skin. I would be embarrassed if I wasn't so intoxicated by Hardin and the alcohol. I have never kissed anyone like this, not even Noah. Noah. I say, "Hardin, stop." But I don't recognize my voice. It's low and husky and my mouth is dehydrated. He doesn't stop. "Hardin," I say again, my voice clear and sharp, and he lets go of my hair. When I look into his eyes, they are darker yet softer, and his lips are a deeper pink and swollen from kissing me. "We can't," I say. Even though I really want to keep kissing him, I know I can't. The softness in his eyes disappears and he pulls himself up, knocking me onto the other side of the bed. What just happened? I'm sorry, I say, and they are the only words I can think of. My heart feels like it will explode any second.
"Sorry for what?"
he says and walks over to his dresser. He pulls out a black t-shirt and pulls it over his head. My eyes go down to his boxers again and they are noticeably tighter in the front. I flush and look away. "For kissing you," I say, though something in me really doesn't want to apologize for that. I don't know why I did it.
"It was just a kiss. People kiss all the time,"
I hear him say. His words hurt my feelings for some reason. Not that I care if he didn't feel what I did. What did I feel? I know I don't actually like him. I am just drunk and he is attractive. It has been a long night and the alcohol made me kiss him. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I fight down the thoughts of how much I wanted it to happen again. He was just being so nice, that's why. "Can we not make a big deal of it then?" I ask. I would be humiliated if he told anyone. This isn't me. I don't get drunk and I don't cheat on my boyfriend at parties.
"Trust me, I don't want anyone to know about this either. Now stop talking about it,"
he snaps. And there's his arrogance again. "So now you're back to your old self, I see."
"I was never anyone else. Don't think because you kissed me, basically against my will, we have some sort of bond now."
Ouch. Against his will? I can still feel the way his hand gripped my hair, the way he pulled me on top of him, and the way his lips mouthed Tess before kissing me again. I shoot up off the bed. "You could have stopped me."
"Hardly,"
he scoffs, and I feel like crying again. He makes me too emotional. It's too humiliating, too painful how he's basically saying I forced him to kiss me. I bury my head in my hands for a moment and head for the door.
"You can stay in here tonight since you have nowhere else to go,"
he says quietly, but I shake my head. I don't want to be anywhere near him. This is all part of his little game. He will offer to let me stay in his room so I'll think he is a decent person. Then he will probably draw some vulgar design on my forehead. "No thanks," I say, and walk out. When I reach the stairs, I think I hear him call my name, but I keep going. Outside, the cool breeze feels wonderful against my skin. I sit on the familiar stone wall and turn my phone back on. It's almost 4 a.m. I should be waking up in an hour to get an early shower and start studying. Instead, I'm sitting on this broken stone wall alone and in the dark. With a few stragglers milling about and unsure what to do, I pull out my phone and scroll through the text messages from Noah and my mother. "Of course," he told her. It's what he would do. But I can't even be upset with him. I just cheated on him. What would give me the right? Chapter 20. A block away from the frat house, the streets are dark and quiet. The other frat houses aren't as big as Hardin's. After an hour and a half of walking and GPS obsessing, I finally reach the campus. Fully sober and figuring that I might as well stay awake, I stop at the 7-Eleven and grab a cup. As the caffeine hits me, I realize that there are so many things I don't understand about Hardin. Like, why is he in a fraternity with a bunch of preppy rich kids if he is punk? And why does he go from hot to cold so quickly? It's all academic musing, though, since I don't know why I even bother to waste my time thinking about him. And after tonight, I am beyond done trying to be friendly with him. I can't believe I kissed him. That was the biggest possible mistake I could have made, and the second I let my guard down, he attacked worse than ever. I'm not stupid enough to trust that he won't tell anyone, but I hope his embarrassment over kissing the virgin will keep him quiet. I will deny it until the grave if anyone asks. I need to come up with a good explanation for my mother and Noah for my behavior tonight. Not the kissing. They will never know about that. But that I was at a party. Again. But I also really need to have a talk with Noah about telling my mother things. If I'm an adult now, she doesn't need to know what I am doing all the time. By the time I reach my dorm, my legs and feet hurt, and I actually sigh in relief as I turn the knob. But then I nearly have a heart attack at the sight of Hardin sitting on my bed. "You've got to be kidding me!" I half scream when I finally regain my composure.
"Where were you?"
he asks calmly.
"I drove around trying to find you for almost 2 hours.
What? What? Why? As in, if he was going to do that, why didn't he just offer to take me home earlier? More importantly, why didn't I ask him to as soon as I found out he hadn't been drinking?
I just don't think it's a good idea for you to be walking around at night alone."
And because I can no longer read his expressions, and because Steph is who knows where and I'm alone here with him, the person who seems to be the real danger to me, all I can do is laugh. It's a wild laugh, ragged and not really me, and it's definitely not because I find this funny, but because I'm too drained to do anything else. Hardin furrows his brows, frowning at me, which only makes me laugh harder. "Get out, Hardin. Just get out." Hardin looks at me and runs his hands through his hair, which is at least something. In the little time that I have known this frustrating man that is Hardin Scott, I have learned that he does that when he is either stressed or uncomfortable. Right now, I hope it's both.
"Teresa, I'm..."
he begins, but his words are cut off by a terrible pounding on the door and screaming, "Teresa! Teresa Young, you open this door!" My mother. It's my mother. At 6 a.m. when a boy is in my room. Immediately, I spring into action, as I always do when faced with her anger. "Oh my God, Hardin, get in the closet!" I whisper hiss and grab his arm, yanking him up off the bed and surprising us both with my strength. He looks down at me, amused.
"I am not hiding in the closet. You're 18.
He says it, and I know he's right, but he doesn't know my mother. I groan in frustration, and she pounds again. The defiance with which his arms are crossed over his chest tells me I'm not moving him. So I check the mirror, wiping at the bags under my eyes, and grab my toothpaste, smearing a little on my tongue to conceal the smell of vodka even beyond my coffee breath. Maybe all three scents will confuse her nose or something. I'm all ready with a pleasant face and greeting on my lips when I open the door, but it's then that I see my mother hasn't come alone. Noah is standing at her side. Of course he is. She looks furious, and he looks... concerned? Hurt? "Hey, what are you guys doing here?" I say to them, but my mother pushes by me and goes straight for Hardin. Noah slips silently into the room, letting her take the lead.
"So this is why you haven't been answering your phone? Because you have this...
She waves her arms around in his direction.
"Tattooed troublemaker in your room at 6 a.m.?
My blood boils. I am usually timid and sort of afraid when it comes to her. She's never hit me or anything, but she isn't shy when it comes to pointing out my mistakes. "You aren't wearing that, are you, Tessa? You should have brushed your hair again, Tessa. I think you could have done better than that on your tests, Tessa." She always puts so much pressure on me to be perfect all the time. It's exhausting. For his part, Noah just stands there glaring at Hardin, and I want to scream at both of them. Actually, all three of them. My mother for treating me like a child, Noah for telling on me, and Hardin for just being Hardin.
Is this what you do in college, young lady? You stay up all night and bring boys back to your room? Poor Noah was worried sick about you, and we drive all this way to find you running around with these strangers, she says, and Noah and I both gasp.
Actually, I just got here, and she wasn't doing anything wrong,
Hardin says, and I am shocked. He has no idea what he is up against. Still, he's an immovable object, she's an unstoppable force. Maybe this would be a good fight. My subconscious tempts me to grab a bag of popcorn and sit down in the front row to watch. My mother's face gets mean.
Excuse me?
I certainly was not speaking to you. I don't even know what someone like you is doing hanging around my daughter anyway. Hardin absorbs the blow mutely and just remains standing and staring at her. Mother, I say through my teeth. I'm not sure why I'm defending Hardin, but I am. Maybe part of it is that she sounds a bit too much like how I treated Hardin when I first met him myself. Noah looks at me, then at Hardin, and back to me again. Can he tell that I just kissed Hardin? The memory is fresh in my mind and makes my skin tingle just thinking about it.
Tessa, you are out of control. I can smell the liquor on you from here, and I can only assume that this is the influence of your lovely roommate and him, she says, punctuating it with an accusing finger.
I am 18, Mother. I have never drank before, and I didn't do anything wrong. I am just doing what every other college student is doing. I'm sorry that my cell phone battery died and that you drove all the way here, but I'm fine. Suddenly exhausted from the last few hours, I sit down at my desk chair after my speech, and she sighs. Seeing my resignation gives my mother a calmer demeanor somehow. She's not a monster after all. Turning to Hardin, she says, "Young man, could you leave us for a minute?" Hardin looks at me as if asking if I will be okay. I nod, and he nods back and walks out of the room. Noah swiftly closes the door behind him, his eyes trailing Hardin all the while. It's a strange sensation, Hardin and I together against my mother and my boyfriend. Somehow I know he'll be waiting somewhere just outside the door until they leave. For the next 20 minutes, my mother sits on my bed and explains that she is just worried about me ruining my chance at an amazing education and doesn't want me to drink again. She also tells me that she doesn't approve of my friendship with Steph, Hardin, or anyone else in their group. She makes me promise that I will stop hanging around with them, and I agree. After tonight, I don't want to be around Hardin anyway, and I won't be going to any more parties with Steph, so there's no way my mother will know if I am friendly with her or not. Finally, she stands up and claps her hands together. Since we are already here, let's go get some breakfast and maybe do some shopping. I nod in agreement, and Noah smiles from where he's leaning on my door. It does sound like a good idea, and I am starving. My thoughts are still a little stifled by alcohol and tiredness, but my walk home, the coffee, and my mother's lecture have sobered me. I head for the door, but stop when my mother coughs.
You'll need to clean up a little and change, of course.
She smiles her condescending smile. I go get some clean clothes out of my dresser and change in the closet. I touch up last night's makeup and am ready to go. Noah opens the door for us, and we all three look at where Hardin is sitting on the floor, leaning against the door across the hall. When he looks up, Noah grasps my hand, tightly, protectively. Still, I find myself wanting to pull my hand away from him. What is wrong with me? We are going to go into town, I tell Hardin. In response, Hardin nods several times, like he's answered some question deep within himself, and for the first time he looks vulnerable, and maybe a little hurt. He humiliated you, my subconscious reminds me, which is true, but I can't help feeling guilty as Noah pulls me along past Hardin, and my mother gives Hardin a victory smile, causing him to look away.
I really don't like that guy,
Noah says, and I nod. Me either, I whisper, but I know I'm lying. Chapter 21. Breakfast with Noah and my mother is agonizingly slow. My mother continues to bring up my wild night and finds every opportunity to ask me if I am tired or hungover. Granted, last night was very out of character for me, but I don't really need to hear about it over and over. Has she always been this way? I know she just wants the best for me, but she seems to be worse now that I'm in college. Or maybe being away from her for a week has given me a newfound outlook on her.
Where should we shop?
Noah asks between mouthfuls of pancake, and I shrug. I wish he had just come alone. I would love to spend time with him. I do need to have a talk with him about not telling my mother every detail of my life, especially the bad, and if we were just alone, that would be easier too. Maybe we should go to the mall around the block. I'm not really familiar with the area yet, I tell them, cutting the last few bites of my French toast into pieces.
Have you thought about where you want to work yet?
Noah asks. I'm not sure yet. A bookstore, maybe? I wish I could find an internship or something related to publishing or writing, I tell them, which elicits from my mother an award-winning, proud smile.
That would be great.
Somewhere you could work until you finish college and that could then hire you full-time, she says, smiling again. I try to hide my sarcasm with, yeah, that would be ideal, but Noah catches it and grabs my hand to give it a little conspiratorial squeeze under the table. As I put my fork into my mouth, the metal reminds me of Hardin's lip ring, and I pause for a moment. Noah catches this, too, and looks at me with questioning eyes. I need to stop thinking about Hardin. Now. I smile at Noah and pull his hand up to kiss it. After breakfast, my mother drives us to the Benton Mall, which is huge and crowded.
I am going to go into Nordstrom, so I'll call you when I am ready, she tells us, to my relief.
Noah takes my hand again, and we browse through a bunch of stores. He tells me about his soccer game on Friday and how he shot the winning goal. I listen intently and tell him how great it all sounds. You look nice today, I tell him, and he smiles. His perfect white smile is adorable. He's wearing a maroon cardigan, khakis, and dress shoes. Yes, he really does wear loafers,